Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Mariam Jacobs, psychosocial therapist, now author of her own published book and recently released Suspended Values in Concentration Camps, Camp and Prison, will be speaking out on concentration camp and prisons in the U.S., the issue of life without parole, solitary confinement, and much, much more. Sometimes when we start the show, unfortunately, the guests don't appear right away, and sometimes they don't appear at all. And it really kind of throws a wrench into the picture because it throws me off. So I am apologizing for coming on late. I had to sign out and come back in again, and I'm hoping our guest will be showing up today because she is a busy woman, and she may be with the client. Now, we have someone on the line on the show with us right now, 605. Do you want to state your name, please?
Yeah, good morning or afternoon, wherever you're at. My name is William Greybird. From the, again, concentration camp 345, Rosebud Sioux Tribe. And the social services and other issues are very important to me as to what's going on here. So I just want to share that much with you, and I'll continue to learn on what's going on around the country on the issue, as the Department of Social Services is a misleading title, because if it's there to help the people, it should be encouraging and cultivating support and change rather than scrutiny and persecution of children, mind you, not adults.
So
I just want to say that much.
Can you talk more about, you know, what goes on in your reservation or in your tribe that brings you to feel this way?
Well, up until recently, there was a major move by, and not so much by the non-native as it was our own relatives who were sitting in these Indian Child Welfare Act offices. And it was sad because I had an issue with the Department of Social Services back in the early 90s. And what I learned about the Indian Child Welfare Act was, unfortunately, was a shameful fact that the men were left out of the picture, even though they're half of the part of responsible in creating the child, creating the present by the creator. And under the Indian Child Welfare Act, as I continue to search for guidance and support, I become more demonized and villainized by my own tribe and my own people. For trying to stick up for my daughters and my son's rights. And there were only children being scrutinized by the Department of Social Services. And as I was going to there, I got accused of something that had allegedly never happened. I mean, allegedly, it's supposed to have done, but never happened. And I don't want to repeat that word because it's only a bad faith narrative that was used to discredit my character and demean my and slander and libel my good character here. And
I'd like to ask you a question. Is your child home with you, or is it your child in a foster home?
They were in the foster homes. They're growing up now and struggling with again the PTSD that they endured in the foster homes.
Exactly.
One of the foster parents.
I was going to ask you when they were in the foster home, were they in a home with their native tribe, or was it someone else?
Non-native home.
Okay,
and
this is
the ideology.
I want to say something about social services. I've been a social worker for some time now, 40 years, 50, almost 50 years. I did work for social services years ago. And one of the things they started to do towards the end of the time that I was there, they started placing children of the Native Indians in homes with other Native Indians. But for years before, they didn't do that. But I wanted to say something about working with families in foster homes. I have the time that I worked 14 years with social services, and I never believed in removing children from their home. First of all, you go out of your way sometimes to try to help the family before thinking about placing the children in foster homes, because foster homes, there's two types of foster homes. There's foster homes with foster parents that really, really care for children and are really trying to help. And then there's foster homes that are just there for the money. And so many children that have been removed from their families and placed in foster homes just for the money have either been violated, they've been abused, or something has happened. And so this is a sad situation. I understand what you're going through, and I know the children, if they were placed in a home that was not appropriate, I'm sure those children were emotionally damaged in some way or another. And PTSD, I hate to say it, but we have a system in this country that talks about PTSD with our military men. They seem to think the only time people have PTSD is if they're in the military. What they fail to realize is that children have PTSD. People incarcerated have PTSD. People in the communities have PTSD. We're living in a country that doesn't know their ass from their face. Because if we had people that were running this country that had any kind of knowledge at all, or even tried to find out by interacting with people who have gone through this, or even going into the prisons to check these people out, to talk to them, then we would see a more normal country. But we have a chaotic, barbaric, unconcerned, inconsiderate society in this country. So I'm going to let you finish saying what you were saying, because I really get upset when I think about the pain and sorrow and suffering that people have gone through unnecessarily.
Yeah. Well, thank you. It's a good relief to know that there's others working diligently to pursue the prevention of crimes against the child. And unfortunately, my children are excuse me?
I'm sorry. No, I'm not talking. I'm sorry. I just got a call. I just
understand
what you're saying.
Yeah, and so you know, the biggest problem was, you know, the system in itself is so dysfunctional. You know, they tell people that, you know, the kids are all right, but no, my children not only had PTSD from the emotional trauma that they've been exposed to, that was imposed upon them without their choice, but the physical trauma just as well. My second youngest son, out of the ones that were placed into the foster care, was tied down in a barn to be punished. He was tied down by the foster father or foster parent, tied down in a barn on all fours with the chicken, threw chicken feed on him, and the chickens pecked on him. And he's only 6 years old. And so my son grows up and he's angered and he gets drunk and all he talks about, wants to do is go over to where these white people are and kill them. and because of what they did to him. And it's unreal. Now he's a young 24-year-old boy, and I'm having to deal with a lot of these residual effects that it was created by the state. And out of a falsehood to vilify me as a Lakota full blood. And all I'm doing is looking for the betterment and a lifestyle of my children, and yet a system that was wrought on desecrating the right of the child since the beginning, the boarding school era was the beginning, continues today. The church and state never were out of bed. They're still in bed together here. And unfortunately for my children growing up with this dysfunction because of the trauma that was imposed upon them by the Department of Social Services, who recently got a big $680-some million check from the government to take care of these foster parents who take our Indian kids and whatever they do with them. And it's unfortunate that they were trying to make Indian families receptive of the children that were removed as a emergency foster placement within the community. But because of the state Ken and Barbie doll measurement of standard, you know, there was a lot of red tape that prevented people from being able to open their doors up and open up their homes to a lot of the relatives that were being processed through. So if you look at the statistics, and I'm working on getting them, it's just a crazy amount of number that's being spent on the social services and the welfare or the taking of children to put in foster, non-native foster homes. There's a lot of money into it. And it doesn't matter, you know, the humanity of the family that they're being placed in. What matters is that amount of money being spent for them to do so and to displace those children from their homes. So the damage is being done. The state Department of Social Services in the state of South Dakota just spent, Kristi Noem just spent all that money on expanding prisons and county jails rather than using that money to work on the social ills of the communities of the state of South Dakota. And more importantly, the underprivileged, which are the reservations. And instead of trying to find a solution for that problem, they want to criminalize it and then incarcerate it without addressing those problems. They call us problems. And we're the first ancestral, you know, residents of this hemisphere, but yet we're treated like, my children especially, are treated like demons, you know, and it's unreal how people can do such things.
What is your first name again?
William.
I want to say one thing, William, and this is why we have an event coming up in June, and we're going to be doing mass calls and letter writing and emails to governors, to legislative members, to the media, because it has to stop. There is so much going on and so much injustice going on in this country. And I have been calling in my co-host, Dorothy Jean D'Agostino. We have been calling for everyone to come together, to join forces, put aside race, put aside religion, for everybody to come together for the month of June. And with all of these concerns, we're writing out a list of all the concerns. We're writing out a listings of contacts, the names, the titles, the addresses, the emails, the phone numbers, and we're going to be distributing that so everybody can call in and write letters and do all of these things. So if you want, I advise you and I request that you maybe get together with others to come and join us in the month of June on these issues. We have Marianne Jacobs on the phone, on the call, on the studio with us now, and she's a psychosocial therapist. I'd like to have her give her feedback on some of the things that you just spoke about. Mariam, are you on with us?
Yes, I am on with. I am on with you, Leona. We forgot that your time has changed into summertime, but our time hasn't yet. So we
another issue in this country. I'm sorry to say, but this is another issue in this country about the time change, because every state. And the problems are the same in every state in the United States of America. Every problem is the same, but the way they operate is different. And it's just like the time zone. They cannot leave time alone. They have to keep messing with the time zone, which puts us all out of sync. Because of Mariam Jacobs, the psychosocial therapist, lives in Netherlands. She lives in Europe. And to try to coincide with our time, just like people in South America, their time is the same as us until we go ahead and put the clock ahead or back. But Mariam, William was just talking about his children. They're grown now. They're grown-ups. But when they were children, they were placed in foster homes. And he was talking about the PTSD that they suffer from even today. So I wanted, first of all, William, I want you to introduce yourself. And then I'd like to have Mariam. And then Dorothy is also on with us. I haven't connected her yet. But if you can introduce yourself. And Mariam Jacobs also has recently published, and it has been released, Suspended Values in Concentration Camp in Prisons. And that speaks on concentration camps and prisons in the United States. And Mariam, William was just saying that they feel like they're in concentration camp or we're in concentration camp.
No, not. Look at the story. Look at the word history. You're going to find that those were the first. I got paperwork. I'll show you. Rosebuds, Pine Ridge, Standing Rock, all those RSU numbers, the enrollment numbers, are the same numbers that Auschwitz and Nuremberg used. Germany copied American government back then to see how they can exterminate entire race of people. And so the enrollment numbers are prison numbers, just like what Adolf Hitler used in the concentration camps of Auschwitz and Nuremberg. The reservations are concentration camps where they kept us away from corporate America and the development of the Western expansion of manifest destiny. We were considered the trouble, the problem of American expansion. And so if you look at the blueprint of all the troubles going on, all the human rights, the rights against the child, all going on, happened right here in Lakota territory first. And we're used as a blueprint for everybody else who stripped their human rights, because we're not a big enough of a minority for everybody to pay attention to, like they've already told me. You guys are such a small number. We got bigger numbers. The African-American group is millions over here. The Asian is millions over here, and the Hispanic are millions over here. You guys are a couple hundred thousand. Well, thanks to your extermination policies, we're at such a small number, but that doesn't mean that resource that you can get to help our people here isn't at such a high demand. Shit, we're at the brink of extinction, and yet you guys act like it ain't nothing. But you know what? The United States has used us as a blueprint to strip away the human rights of everybody else. The United States may not have started. It's been going on for thousands of years. But guess what? You know, all those criminals and crooks around the globe came to the United States and perfected the dehumanization of their own population. So
I'm going to show you how we relate to what you're saying. I want Mariam to respond to you, because she has been in the U.S. prisons. She's been volunteering in a prison in the Netherlands. She's interacted with prisoners. She knows about the Native Indians. She knows a lot about what all of you have gone through. So I would like to have her
still
respond.
Going through, not gone through, but still going through.
Exactly. So I'd like to have her give you some feedback on that, if you can, Mariam.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, I can say a few words, but I just came on the show, so I have to get into it. I will just try to explain. I wrote my book because 25 years ago I visited a concentration camp Auschwitz in Poland, and three or four years ago, it was right before the pandemic started, I visited a prison in Florida, and what I felt intuitively some, compression. I felt a compression between the two systems, and I wanted to be sure if my intuition was right, because it can be dangerous to, you know, to say all these things. So I did research on the underlying structure of the concentration camps in World War II, and the prison system in the United States, and I tried to look further than, you know, what we all know and what is talked about, like corporal power. We know that locking up people fills the pockets of the one of the one, you know, the 1% of the 1% and the corporations. You see it also now with the refugees, how they are treated. And but I wanted to go deeper, so I also looked at what's happening with an issue like responsibility. And I made a distinction between moral responsibility, which is a responsibility that comes from the heart that lives in every human being, and normative responsibility, which means that we have to follow rules from higher positions. So, and I also looked at, you know, ways of violence, what kind of violence was present in the concentration camps, and what kind of violence is present now in the United States prison systems. And I tried to find a universal pattern, and that's what I wrote my book about. And I think this pattern can be applied to a lot of systems that we developed, which are not natural systems, but artificial systems that we human beings develop. And it's a lot is based on exclusion of people and dehumanization. So that somebody, you know, is treated like, you know, you have these hierarchy, this vertical hierarchy. And we think, you know, like in your country, white people often think that they are more than people of other colors, which is nonsense, of course. So these are elements of this pattern that we see, and it's universal. And well, I also described what happens to people who are incarcerated in these structures and how they are dehumanized, and it happened then and it happens now. It's still happening.
Correct. You know, the biggest problem we have here in Lakota territory is getting people to own up to what's going on here. You know, it's sad, but as we've seen it, you know, they talk about the sanctions and embargoes all around the country before they were ever called that. The imperialists called it sell or starve. They locked my grandpas and grandmas in these cavalry forts so they can sell away the Black Hills. And the reason why I want to talk about the Lakota people is because of the fact that we're the ones out of all of the 386 tribes in 376 tribes in the United States that are, you know, that have tribes. We're the ones with the gold and the silver, the nickel, the copper, the uranium, the zircite, the bentonite, the oil, and so all our land is mineral rich resource reserve, and the only way they can remove us is by systematically using the dysfunctional system to displace us.
What I think about Native American people, or when I think about indigenous people all over the world, what I always say is we are in a decline. Not only in the United States, but on the whole world, we are devastating ourselves, not the planet. The planet will survive. It has survived more, and I'm very happy that the planet will survive. But we are devastating human beings, especially, I think, the Western human beings are devastating the human race and a lot of animal world, and I think we have lost a connection that indigenous people still have. They have the wisdom that we need to survive, and we don't listen. We are so stupid. We think about money, capital, power, and all that, and we go against natural law and going
right
against natural. That's my religion. You know, when people speak about God and all that, and I think God for me is, when I think I see God back in natural law. When I walk at my river in nature and I see how nature behaves according this law, that's for me religion. And we go against these natural laws, and that means that we destruct ourselves. And only the indigenous people are still connected to that wisdom. And we lost it. We Western people lost that connection. And that hurts me very much. We go against it. I mean, a long time ago, I read, it was a quote maybe, or a little story about, you know, before a colonist came to the United States, there was gold in the ground, but the native people, they saw the gold as part of the planet. It belonged to the planet. And then the colonists came and they translated it into money. And we do that not only with the materials that don't belong to us, but belong to the planet. They are part of the planet. But we also do that with each other. You see, we devalue a certain groups of people and devastate them. So we go against religion. People go to church and they, you know, they preach and they pray and all that. But at the same time, they devastate life, and life is sacred. You know,
but that church
sacred.
They go to, that church they go to, excuse me, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I don't use that word until they can accept and acknowledge and respect my culture and my spiritual way. Christianity has been set on the desecration and the eraser of my entire race of people, as indigenous they call us, but Lakota, Tituan, Oyate is who we are. And then trying to minimize the humanity of all people, you know, this elected official failed leadership that be, you know, that gods, I like to say gods because it's not a singular religious deity that they're trying to put up there. It's a plural. It's gold, oil, drugs, and sodomy. Mm. These guys like sodomy. They're really dirty people. And so that's what they're worshiping. It's a symbolic.
Exactly.
It's a symbolic illusion that they have. When you symbolically eat the body of a dead man and drink his blood in order to be saved and then turn around and pay your tithe so you can be absolved from it again, you know, it blows my mind as how a man can make a man-made religion to subdue men and women under that false belief. That religion is a man-made religion. It's only 4,000 years old, stolen from Egypt. That last word, amen, they used comes from Egypt. That's Amun-Ra that they're praying to. They're praying to an Egyptian god, not a white, blue-eyed, blonde-haired, white-skinned deity. He's an Egyptian god with dark hair, dark skin, and dark eyes. So where's the reality in that? And at the same time, our belief is what you can't see and what you can't touch. The affirmation of what the rest of humanity is what they can see and what they can't touch. If you follow a man or if you follow a woman, as my grandpa and grandmas would tell me, you're going to lose your way.
Yeah.
But if you follow the spirit and keep it holy, you're going to be okay. And somehow the relatives lost that way.
But I also think, you know, that's part of this human structure, this artifice structure, is that a lot of people like to follow, a person. Because if you follow another person and put him on a throne, pedestalize him, like we pedestalize Jesus, because while Jesus...
Constantinople.
Yeah, but what I want to say is, you know, if when they pedestalize another human being, they don't need to take responsibility for themselves. They only can follow the other person, and that's easier. Like sheep, you know. And that's what
remember that word they use, gaslighting?
Yeah, I know that word. I've been a victim of gaslighting, so I know that word
I know it too well. It's just a new 50-cent word for another word of manipulation. But they try to spin all these words into something different, but it's all the same thing.
What I hear going on with William, and so many people around the country have had this same kind of feeling, the emotions, the frustration, you know, and it's all about the injustices. This is what goes on in this country. There's so much injustice going on that people of all races, people of all cultures are experiencing it. And this is why I appreciate Marian Jacob so much, because she is clear across the pond, and yet she has done her research. She has done her investigative work. She has done volunteer work. She has a passion too, William, to make changes for all of us, for all the religions and all the races and all the cultures. And there has to be more people like her that are out there that have taken the time to do all this research. And that's why I'm sure if when the book comes to the United States of America, and it should be here soon if it's not already, that's why it's important for the concentration camp and prisons in U.S. And I hope she'll write another book on some of this to expand more on the injustices that go on in this country. Because one of the things is every state, people in every state are complaining because their loved ones are being abused or violated in the prisons. Their loved ones are receiving unharsh and unfair sentencing. A lot of them were on death row, which Dorothy Jean D'Agostino had mentioned. She just was talking about in the Constitution, mentally ill people that are not supposed to be put to death, and so many have been put to death, the death penalty, especially in Texas. But these are the things that we need to remember. We need to remember that even though it's our culture or it's our state, even though we feel like we're isolated from others, we're not. This problem of injustice in America is nationwide. It's affecting all of us of all cultures, religions.
It's global. It's global wide, actually, to be more politically correct. It's global wide because America is affecting everybody that's their allies and everybody that's not. For some reason,
exactly.
they think they're entitled. But it's the elected few that are in the positions. And unfortunately for us, it's imposed upon every one of us of color, all the shades of color. I hate to say it that way, but all the shades of color have been left out of the pristine white image of corporate America. And it's going to take every one of us from all walks and all spectrums of the community to, like you said, come together and open dialogue and with different beliefs, different whatever.
Exactly.
We have to come together collectively to find that common resolve that we're all seeking, not just me, not just you, not just him and her. But as a Lakota Oyate, we are a social animal. You call us communism or whatever, this state antisocial. Everything's antisocial. You know, they're calling it communism here in South Dakota. But shit, we're a society of societies. Lakota people are a social animal. We are built by people, and we're a matriarch society. So we cannot in any way dissuade, you know, the collective whole opinion rather than just one. We're not worked that way. We don't work
there
that way.
There was a time when man could live with animals, all animals, in a peaceful way. But if you notice now, animals have become very violent. And that's the same way with the population in the country. There was a time when people years ago were friendly, the Indians, the Native Indians. But look at now, out of the frustration, and just like people incarcerated, there was a time when there were many, so many that were innocent, vulnerable. And now throughout the years, they become violent because of the injustices that go on and the frustration because we, unless we are in some high position in some political arena, we are the ones that are looked down upon. And the people that are overseeing the country and the world, the government leaders, are people that have come from prominent backgrounds, that have come from elite, from wealth. And they're trying to tell the middle class, the low and middle class people how to live when they've never had to deal with any of the emotional or the physical or the violations that the people have gone through. There have been so many people that grew up on the streets, the ghettos, the drug-infested areas with domestic violence in their homes, whatever's going on. But our leaders have never gone through that, so they don't know how to lead the country. We have the Republicans right now and the Democrats at each other's throat. And what are they doing but putting us all in the middle of this, saying the American people? The American people, BS.
But I think that they are not interested anymore in leading the country. They are only interested in leading themselves. And that works. You know, a lot of people are ignorant of what is happening. You know, when development started, you know, technical development, and we got all these, you know, an easier life that was in my youth, You know, you've got a washing machine and a dishwasher and all that came up. At first, it benefited the people. Now we have become not the goal anymore, but we have become commodity ourselves. We are commodity. Animals are commodity. Only for a few people who benefit. People are ignorant of that. We are used. We are controlled. If you look at what's happening with the abortion law, I'm not talking about abortion itself, but in fact, every discussion about abortion is not about abortion. It's about power and control. That's what it's about, but it's sold under another subject. So what you see is a lot of emotion. Emotion keeps people oppressed. There is a lot of control, you know, like police force control, etc., that keeps people suppressed. In Texas, people have to report each other at the police force when they suspect somebody wants an abortion. What does it mean? It means that people are now taught to control each other. That's the danger, and I'm not talking about the subject. I'm talking about the underlying structure. So people in the land of the free are so controlled and now learn to control each other and betray each other. And that's what's happening in the United States.
Keep going to the church and you're going to be just like the domestic animal going following the leadership, because you don't question the leadership. That's what Christianity is all about. When Constantinople first created it and incorporated it into the Roman Empire, he wanted to control his people. And the only way he can control them is put the fear of going to hell. And the only way you can be safe from going to that hell was coming into this house of God, paying your tithes and being absolved from all of the heinous crimes that you commit throughout the week. And
exactly.
So that false belief, that false narrative has been ongoing. So this false sense of ideology or the concepts of thought being brewed into the minds of these false leaders are not about human character or human right or human nature, but about how much results of the money you can get off of that human character, that human right, or that human nature, how much you can exploit off of that individual or group of individuals or that land that those individuals live on. And to continue the desecration throughout eons, like I said, the United States never started it, but they perfected it here. And the Lakota people always knew from the beginning. We got a story we can tell with our hands and our body and without writing. And we can tell this story. It starts at 7.6 billion years old, and now we're in the fifth cleansing of the earth, the second battle between good and evil, and the age of fire. So we know. We've been here four times before. Every time our mother, the earth, had cleansed herself. The last one was the age of water, where Noah had his ark, and we have a eagle man and a turtle woman in our story. And now we're in that fifth age, and that fifth age of fire. And we know we'll be here. We've been here since the beginning, and we'll be here in the end. They come and they go, like our ancestors always said.
Don't worry.
They'll fade away, because they come here with a fraction of a nanosecond of interest for themselves, not for the entirety of all of creation and protecting and preserving. For the rest, they want to gobble it all up all at once and then leave. But, you know, they've got no other place to leave. So when they die, they can't go to heaven or they can't go to hell. So they run around on the earth. They don't know where they're at. That's why they develop these ghost hunters and paranormal programs, so they can, you know, catch these spirits and ghosts from scurrying around communities and homes, harassing people and families because they can't find their heaven or hell. But we have a happy hunting ground. You know, the Lakota people have a place. If you've done everything right and accordingly, you're able to make that transition over into the spirit world. But if you did something wrong, you have to stay here until you correct it. And so that's why a lot
something?
Of these places, these new urban areas are so infested with a lot of the spirit that they haven't found their way home.
Can I say something real quick? Not to talk about religion, because I'll tell you, I respect everybody's religion. Myself, I don't get into it anymore.
Well, I do too, but
what I'm saying though is people in this country, they tend to listen to other people. Man that preaches is man, learning from man. So they're just teaching what they have learned from somebody else. If they're going to do anything, really, really dig deep into their own books, their own Bibles or whatever. But you mentioned that you think the earth will go on forever. It was true by flood the first time, but the second time by fire. And if we notice right now with the global warming, with the
That's only two of the four you guys know.
Pardon?
I said that's only two of the four that actually existed.
No, what I was going to say, though,
is
if you notice now, they're talking a lot about UFOs.
The cause of the flood was a meteor, right?
Right, and that's what's happening now.
The first one was the meteor, and then the second one was the battle between good and evil, the first battle between good and evil and the second cleansing, and the four-legged lost guardianship to the two-legged of the earth. The third cleansing of the earth was when the five bad creatures that killed the people were sealed in a tomb for all time with these three lightning bolts.
Mm-hmm.
And the fourth one was the great flood, you know. And now that we're in the fifth one, in the age of fire. So,
and if you,
you
notice,
know,
they're talking a lot
what,
about
that's,
they're talking a lot
that's
about
according
that.
To the according to the Lakota creation story. And that's
but I also can put on, sorry, but I want to say this real quick. I can also, you know, we live in chaos. You know, chaos already has started and it gets worse. And I think when you look at natural law, chaos and order are always alternating. So maybe this is needed, you know, that we now live in chaos.
We might not
experience order anymore because, you know, it gets here much later. But, you know, out of chaos comes order, and out of order comes chaos. That's what you also see in nature. When we, you know, that's also what you see in a wood or in nature. So for me, there's also something which is, in a way, yeah, not strange or something. And I feel relieved that I realize that, you know, the planet itself is going its own way. You know, that's what I also see in nature. We can do whatever we want, and we can think that we, you know, can dominate the earth and all that. But at the same time, nature does what it always does. It doesn't stop. It always goes on, independent from us, independent from the people's will to power.
Exactly.
I don't know about that. We still communicate with our mother, the nature. We still openly communicate, and she responds to us. So we never lost that. Elakota Vogalate Ahani, Omakia Yo Metakia, helping our people that way, this language, and tell the original language. These animals all know the language. The creation knows this language, but nobody. See, these guys been here for 536 years, and they still don't know my language. They don't know
my
culture. They don't know the way I live.
My mother was Lebanese, and I still don't know that language.
Huh?
I said my mother was Lebanese, and I don't know the Arabic
but,
language.
But my point is that I didn't get in a boat and go overseas in somebody else's home and rape all their children and all their women and murder all their men and all their elders, and then take my home and put it on their cemetery and call it my home. That's not my homeland. I never left. Mm. But everybody else came from a boat, and they want to impose their standards of conduct on me, when my system has always worked and still continuing to work, even though I go through all this chaos and confusion and whatever that's happening on a daily basis. But in our story, it also talks about Petesangwe, the white buffalo calf woman who had brought that chanupa, that prayer pipe, to us with those seven sacred laws of the Creator. Four of them belonging to women and three belonging to men. And that in order to survive this white storm that's coming to our land, we must live by this chanupa. We must live by these natural laws. And through that, and only through that, we will find our way through the fifth cleansing here today.
But then
so we
you
know have, that already. We understand all that.
But getting other people to realize
what they're doing is a self-destructive.
But if you talk about natural laws, is that the universal law? Is that the same universal law? Do you mean the same,
same thing.
Because because living according to universal law is something that what I experience from it is that how do I say it? It goes beyond rational thinking. For me, it's older. It has always been there. Not there. It always has been. I don't know how
that's
to explain
we, it. We call it the Wong Kan Tanka. We call it the Great Mystery.
Yeah.
It's so holy
and
so sacred that we can't we're not allowed to question it. We're not allowed to try to identify it because it's not a him and it's not a her.
No, exactly.
And
exactly.
And we have to acknowledge it as a great mystery. It's hard, but we have to keep this faith. They said we have to continue to hold this faith in something we can't see, something that we can't touch, you know, something we can't hear.
But is it something that you can experience its expressions by intuition?
By many ways. Like I said, every year we're getting ready again. We just got done with welcoming back the Thunder People and the Lightning People ceremony. Mm-hmm. And then there's another one coming. We're getting ready for the Wohiambla, the Vision Quest. Everybody's getting ready now. So we made it through another winter. You know, I can say that myself, as old as I am, I'm 56. I made another winter and continuing to teach and help my younger relatives, my sons and daughters, my nephews and nieces and grandsons and granddaughters to cultivate a better way of thinking, a better lifestyle habit, no drugs, no alcohol, and no criminal activity, and continue to work on these altars so that they can continue to help their families, their children, and their homes and their communities. So if we can continue to cultivate that standard of lifestyle and good behavioral habit coming out of that without having to tell somebody, this is how you do it, that's how you do it. We can't force people to live the way we know how to live, but we can live in such a way as for them to and live in such a way as to emanate that lifestyle, a good lifestyle, so that they can become attracted on their own free will. Not because I told them or because I forced them to, because they say, hey, look at Braver, he don't have all that white man stuff or whatever, but somehow he's still healthy and he's still done all those things. But they're trying to put him in jail all the time for the things he's doing. I wonder why. But that's what happens, you know. They say, well, you live in that lifestyle. I said, I have no choice. So I'm a Lakota, but they're always trying to find some kind of way to put me in jail or prison by using these heinous crimes, trying to discredit my character, discredit my Lakota way of life. But they can't. It's impossible. Because even in their own falsehood, I disclose that. If you don't want to use my treaty, let's use your constitution. And in that constitution, you have a right to freedom of speech. You have the right to stand and redress your grievances. And under that equal protection, if you're going to accuse me of something, I have the cloak of immunity of innocent until proven guilty. But in this country, you're guilty until proven innocent. Anyway, with that said, I'm trying to advocate for my case. Then next thing you know, you got everybody out saying, oh, hey, that guy's he's a rapist, he's a murderer, he's a kidnapper, he's a child molester, all these bad names. But you know what? You can never prove any of that. It's just all rhetoric. And it's all political attacks. It never ever comes over here.
But I also think, and we talked about it before in the radio show, that, you know, when you look at mass incarceration, some people say the system is broken, but it depends on how you look at it. For some parties, the system works very well because it's a million-dollar industry. You shouldn't forget that. Locking up living bodies pays very well. And that's evil. To me, that's evil. So
well, again,
you
got to remember.
Mm-hmm.
You got to remember, this country is built off of results. Its imperialistic point of view is results on revenue, generating revenue, and at the expense of whatever human sacrifice they're using to get the results. That's what it's going to take, and they don't care about, you know, so and so's having a, you know, she's going to have a baby and she can't make it to the job at her secretary job and can't finish the paper because she's going into labor. For what do? They don't even think of that. They can her right there, you know. Single young mother trying to make ends meet, and yet they don't even have that consideration. Or a young man, you know, who don't have a right to work but gets there late, 5 minutes late, and they can him because he can't make it. You know, this ideology, this concept of thought being generated comes from a old world archaic and medieval European Western concept of man-made, you know, religious belief. And that's my point of view. That's my opinion. Yeah, I respect all religions, but you know what? Until they respect mine, I have no room for that. And I will call that for what it is, because of what it's been doing and continuing to do to me and my families. According to the manifest destinies and doctrines of discovery, we're heathen savages. We own nothing more than less than an animal, because we're incompetent, according to the Burke County Act of 1906. Because we couldn't speak the English, read it, or write it, you were considered incompetent. I'm only a ward. I need a guardian, and I need somebody to take care of my, because I'm not competent enough. But these are laws that are still in place, but some of them have never been struck in from the record. They've been repealed. There's a distinction between being struck in from the record and repealed. Repeal says it's still there. It's just not being published anymore. Being stricken from the record means they don't exist no more. So when you use that, 1906 Burke County Act, it says it talks about the competency law of what's considered incompetent.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes real dehumanizing when you got a fluent Lakota speaker only speaks Lakota, trying to ask for help, and then this person saying, "Well, get this person out of the way. They don't speak American English. Speak American. This is America." We run into that all the time here at the hospital and other places, but not anymore, because you got people standing up like me saying, "Hey, watch how you talk to that elder. Watch how you do this and how you do that." I ain't going to stand for that anymore. I'm tired of, under that freedom of speech, I told that judge, don't tell me to go to that man, that public pretender. He's only going to tell you what you want him to tell you. I'm going to tell you what I'm going to tell you. I'm the one sitting in that jail, so not him. Boy, he didn't like it. How am I violating your rights? I said, before you became a judge, you're not a god. Before you became a judge, you took an oath to this constitution and the state jurisdictional constitution that you're in. And the first one, it says the freedom of speech. Well, he represents you. I said, he don't represent me. He don't represent me for shit. I'm just on a piece of paper. And this, mind you, this is the head state criminal court judge here in South Dakota. Might not like it, but I'm going to tell him exactly how it is. You can't deprive me, because you're depriving me of my right to speak and my right to confront and cross-examine my accuser, which you guys are denying, always have denied. And I want to confront and cross-examine and expose any potential impeachable characteristics that you have to defame my and slander my good character. They never give me that opportunity. They always try, but this last time they had to.
As you said, it's good and evil. We have in this country and around the world, there's good and evil, even in the courts. We have corrupt judges, corrupt lawyers. We have corrupt prosecutors. We have corrupt correctional officers, corrupt officials. We have corruption all over the place. There's a few good ones, not many, but there's a few good ones. They're just too afraid to come forward and expose their own peers.
Right.
But one of the things we can't do, and that is to stereotype, because we have people of all colors that you're going to find good and evil in them. We have some of our own people that won't
you're
do
right.
a thing for
you're
us
right.
or will turn their back on us, where the Caucasian might. But the thing is, we have to look at the individuals. When we get to be so frustrated with the corruption and the inconsistencies in this country and all the things that go on, we have to be reminded that there are some good ones. And those are the ones we have to pick out and try to work with. We have to try to work with the good ones to try to bring about justice. We're not going to get it from these corrupt lawyers and judges and prison officials and commissioners.
No. Well, it's their system. It's not ours. And we got to go outside of that system. We got to go out to the World Court in Geneva and the United Nations, the global community, to sit in judgment on the United States. Because it's going around the world claiming it's a human rights champion while it's violating human rights on a daily basis. It used to be just indigenous people, but guess what? It's everybody now, even the poor white people. Like one of our political leaders, the great Russell Means, had stated, there's a new Indian in town today that, you poor white people, you're going to get treated just like the rest of us. There's the haves and the have-nots. There's no middle class anymore. Either you're rich or you're poor. Either you have or you have not. And if you poor white people are just as poor as us, guess what? You're going to get slid right next to us, and you're going to be treated worse than us, because we can say discrimination and racism, but you white people getting treated by white people, there's no recourse for you. So we know that already, and we've collaborated. And some of my best friends are non-Lakotas, And they understand, you know, they're all practicing lawyers, attorneys, prosecutors, and judges that collaborate with. And I want to see their mindset and how they think. And they're freaking out about how I'm scrutinizing their proceedings too, and hoping that we can work together collectively and in a very diplomatic way, find a common goal here locally. But at the same time, we're saying what's going on here in Lakota territory, if we can change this right here, it can change everywhere else, because this is where the whirlwind first started, right here.
It has to be on a It has to be on a national level.
It has to be international.
We are looking at taking it to the United Nations in June. This is something that we've also been talking about.
Yeah, that's good. Because it's going to take all of us. It's going to take all of us, not just you or me or my story or your story. It's going to take all of us.
Yeah,
we all have that same story.
Yeah, I think it's now going all over the country because, you know, all the effort and money is not used to develop the country. That's why you don't have a middle class anymore.
Mm.
Like what Marianne. You saw with the infrastructure and now, you know, a short time ago with this train accident, this huge train accident.
Oh, man.
And I heard something, I don't know where it was, that Biden now said that he still wants to have this pipeline in one of the natural areas somewhere. When he was a candidate president, he said, no, it's never, ever going to happen. And now he approves it on it.
Right.
Mm-mm-mm.
That's, oh, my goodness.
Mm-mm.
I have no words for that.
Right. That's our government leaders for you.
They lead themselves. They don't lead the country. They lead themselves.
I had a question for you as a psychosocial therapist. And I was talking with Dorothy Jean about this too the other day. You know, she was telling me about all these executions that have been taking place in Texas. And one of the things I find, why Texas, why Governor Abbott, why a crippled man in a wheelchair would be executing so many people? And I said, and this is on my own opinion, my own philosophy on this, but when you deal with people incarcerated who are physically healthy, and here you are in a wheelchair for the rest of your life with all kinds of steel in your body, it's almost as though, as they say, misery loves company. And I wonder sometimes if all these unnecessary executions, because Dorothy, and she can mention it, she can mention it as well. She said in the Constitution, she recently found out that mentally ill people from the Constitution now in all these years were not supposed to be executed or given the death penalty.
Of course not.
They've been doing this for years. Dorothy, if you want to speak a little bit on that, please do.
Well, I don't know what the conversation is.
Oh, if you haven't been listening, that's okay.
Yeah, I have. But I just took notes on the Constitution of the United States where it said mentally ill people should be not on an execution list or anything else, while even on death row they shouldn't be on. And I was taking the facts of the total execution is 2,721. Block execution is 85. The block execution is 3.12%. And it's just amazing how these executions can be put forth for mental illness when they even think and they have a mental problem. They should not be executed. They should not be on death row. They should be in a mental facility that
now
they should be taken care of.
Now, the statistics you just mentioned, is that in Texas only or is that nationwide?
That is nationwide. The executions is 4,374. The blotched executions are 84, which is a blocked execution rate is 1.92%. The lethal injection total execution is 593. Blotched execution of the lethal gas, 2, which is the blocked execution rate, is 5.4%. All methods of executions total 8,776, with the blocked execution of 276, which is the blocked execution rate is 3.15%, meaning the drugs are outdated and should not even be used, and they are being used.
You know, I was telling Dorothy Jean, and I'll tell you, I still feel this way. How can a government punish someone that has committed a fatality, someone who has committed a murder? How can a government punish them by killing them? It makes me wonder what kind of leaders we have when they do the same thing because they have authority or power to do the same thing to somebody. It's almost like I can't figure it out. And this is why in June we're going to be demanding an end to death penalty, because it doesn't make any sense. I don't know how it's going on this long. I really don't. But you don't kill somebody as a punishment for killing somebody. It doesn't make any sense at all.
It don't. Can I add something real quick?
Go ahead.
Okay, I guess it's on the same subject matter, but how they, and you got me thinking about how do they kill disabled people or mentally ill people? How can you justify that? Now, if you look at South Dakota and I think Texas too, were the two when they were admitted into the union back in the, you know, South Dakota was in 1889. They were given, with the exception of them being added to the union, they were given amendment power to amend the Constitution of the United States. And in 2012, when Dennis Dugard used to be the governor for the state of South Dakota at the time, we had a mental health crisis, and still do. And it's a national thing. It's probably a global thing too, because of corporate entities around the world, that instead of categorizing this mental health crisis that we had, that we have in Rapid City and South Dakota, all across South Dakota in itself in general, instead of categorizing all that money that he had to fund that mental health program, was taken out and put into the law enforcement, where they now spent all the money on the categorizing of mental illnesses that were going on in the communities across the state of South Dakota. Now criminalize those conditions, not categorize them as a mental health condition, but criminalize them as a criminal offense, and then throw them in a prison and in a jail, and then go from there, you know. And so South Dakota been given this opportunity to do that. And so instead of using all that money to build social rehabilitation or awareness programs and projects for the less fortunate in the state of South Dakota, have actually turned around and spent more money on building bigger prisons in the state, bigger county jails. And then while we're talking about that, same thing, to displace all of these people. We've got 4,000 military personnel coming into the Air Force base, but they're never, ever addressing the indigenous people's rights here. So when that comes, I can imagine that all our people living on the streets are going to be put into the prison because of this. So that mental health crisis that we got going on in a global community is being justified legislatively, I believe, through the state of South Dakota and others who have the opportunity to change that constitution on a national level to overlook these kind of, how they would say, social ills of our society. Instead of categorizing them as mental health issues, they've now criminalized them as criminal offenses, and now have a justification, just like when they first used in the Johnson v. McIntosh on how to displace Indians off of their land legally. They used the court system to legally justify the inhuman displacement of these indigenous people on their homeland. So it's a systematic approach, and I've been studying, I've been researching for 37 years of my life, and I honestly believe that's one of the legislative mechanisms that they've been using right here in the state of South Dakota. So I just want to say that much. Thank you.
Maybe it's nationwide, because I think the same structure you see with refugees now, you know, in these detention centers, but they are like prisons.
Right. So
and
when South Dakota's...
When
South
you
Dakota's,
see these raids on the... Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, when South Dakota is allowed to draft that kind of legislative act that can become a national act, not just the state, it's pretty has some serious implications if you really look at it, because this is a conservative, far-right state, you know. And
yeah.
Boy, the human rights are on a grand scale going on, and if this is what they're doing and how they can use that constitution and amending it to manipulate the dehumanizing of its citizens, that's something really important to take a look at.
Yeah, there is a lot of manipulation in the amendments, like corporations fall on the 14th Amendment. And you have this gap in the 13th Amendment, you know, which abolishes slavery except for people who committed a crime. You know, there is a lot of money. Well, there is a lot of gaslighting in the amendments. That's maybe what we could say. And all these terms in the 8th Amendment, they are also manipulative. They are. You can interpret them anyway in all kinds of ways. They are not clear. So it's very easy to do the bad things under the amendments. That's why these things can happen.
Right. Because it's a legalized legislative act that was, you know, that they allegedly drafted in pursuit of the Constitution or whatever, you know. But again, that's pretty scary. If a rural state like the state of South Dakota, with such a small number of residents, has the ability to adjust and change that national constitution, that's pretty scary, especially when it's all Republican here, you know, and designed to continue to dehumanize its citizens by legislative acts, you know, and congressional laws. I mean, boy, that's pretty scary. And I don't think we'll ever find any resolve in any of these platforms in the courts. You might find some Democrats that might give us a good support, but then you got these appeals judges that, you know, again, really hard to see. You know, you're running
I don't think that in the United States you have a real left party anymore. I think that the Democrats have become central right and the Republicans have become far right.
Yeah, you're right. And neither one of them in any kind of way has any interest in the people, because if you look at Obama, everybody thought he was okay when he went to Cannonball, North Dakota, on the Indian Reservation of Standing Rock over there. But 6 months later, they used that Enclaves Act to carve out a big chunk of federal land, Federal Enclaves Act carved out a big chunk of land, only to allow Dakota Access Pipeline to go right on through there 6 months later after he left. And yet, he has a big interest in that steel corporation that was supplying the pipeline. Even though he went against it, he still had a financial interest in that contract, which had to do with that steel corporation. So even the Democrats, you know, it doesn't matter. They're still talking about money and results instead of human life.
Yeah.
And how to protect it.
But that's also what you see now with Biden, who, you know, all that money is going to Ukraine, and it's affect the fear about losing world power from the United States, instead of using that money to build a country. There's no real union order, there's no real ongoing development, human development for the citizens in the United States. You know, one president can, you know, introduce a bill, but 4 years later, another president can break everything down again. So you, you don't get further and further. There is no real long-term development. And that's also what you see, I think, in the prisons. Here in the Netherlands, we have forensic psychiatric hospitals. That costs us taxpayers a lot of money. But people are put there who have committed a crime, you know, influenced by maybe a mental disorder or trauma or anything else. And they get treatment in these hospitals. They are very expensive, but we choose for this system in order to heal these people. So in our prisons are people who did commit a crime and wanted to do deliberately harm without being influenced by other circumstances. And in the United States, you see, you know, well, you see even a lot of innocent people in the prisons. I think sometimes I think it's like, you know, people who stand in the way, they are thrown in prison or a refugee in prison.
Right.
I noticed that a lot of the banks are falling now. They've been talking about these major banks that have been falling. So there is, they're starting to feel the brunt of it too, these corporations, I'm sure.
Which is good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think everything has to fall down and then it can get up again, because this is what's happening now. It's so devastating, and well, people don't stand up too much, you know, too much. They should protest. They should become aware and awake and, you know, aware of
well,
what the situation they are in. They are abandoned. Citizens are abandoned.
Well, right. But you see what happens in Lakota territory when we stand up and protest. Should they shoot us with rubber bullets, and in a dead of freezing winter, they shoot us with water, and they tear gas the hell out of us, you know. My son
That's
got
crazy.
Shot three times with those rubber bullets trying to help an older woman out. And that's how
really
dehumanized. I mean, that's all over, you know, everywhere, but that was the most recent one. Just to show how corporate America, with their corporate gangsters who carry badges and guns, you know, are no different than the criminals they claim to be patrolling.
They
and
were beating up a woman
money,
last night on the news. The police were beating up, punching a woman on the floor in some place, some building. They were beating her. It was all over the news this morning. These police officers, law enforcement are getting so bold to be beating on women now. And they wonder why some of them are getting shot or getting, I can't believe these barbaric people.
Right.
Well, it's crazy, you know. Of course, I think you all are used to it, but it is a shock and thing that you have to be afraid of the police. But you are so used to it because this, you know, but if, you know, that's already crazy to think about. But that's the same with the death penalty, what you started, Leona. The fact that you do have death penalty, it's insane.
It doesn't make sense. Miriam, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about your book. I'm really curious. I've been reading some of it. I've been reading some of it. And it's very interesting. And it's just on time and on target with everything that's going on. But if you can just talk a little bit about that, the concentration camp in prisons in the U.S.
I did. My book is also a research I did to graduate for my master of philosophy. And in my book, I just start with I wanted to understand what a norm means. So I explain what, you know, you have values and norms, rules. What is a norm? I wanted to understand how norms can be suspended. I also have explained that mass incarceration is a political choice. And one of the reasons mass incarceration can exist is because the amendments in the United States are overshadowed. And I saw a similarity with what happened when Hitler came to power. So that's what I looked at. And I've used the word hyperlagellity. I got that from a resource that I found who wrote about it. Hyperlagellity means the fact that, you know, laws and rules that the legal things are become too big, and they overshadow values. The norms overshadow the values, and in the middle of that, humans are being dehumanized. That's in fact my conclusion, and I write towards that. And then I also write about the people who lived in the concentration camps, the way of dehumanization in the concentration camp, and I really see some similarities with the prisoners in the United States prison system. And of course, not every prison is the same. There are 50 states and there are differences, but when you look at the structure beneath it, the structure is universal. That's what I wrote about. And for me, what I hear from the Netherlands, because I've been invited for a podcast here in the Netherlands, and people are emailing me, they have questions. What they find very eye-opening is the difference that I make between normative violence, which is also magnified, that was the word, and a moral responsibility that is overshadowed. And that's what you see, for instance, in the prison system. There are so many procedures and rules that guards have to follow. There is no room for the heart. There is no room for independent thinking. And I think George Floyd, what happened back then on the streets, what I saw on these body cams is these police officers were so busy with following all these procedures and rules that they could not listen to their own intuition. And that's what's missing in America. Listen to your own heart, to your own intuition. Take moral responsibility. Moral responsibility is something I think everybody is born with, but you have to make the connection with it in yourself. And normative responsibility is what, you know, we get taught in society and at schools and all that. And the balance is gone. There's no balance between that. That's why you have, one of the reasons that's why you have mass incarceration. But I think a most important thing is that you have mass incarceration is because of the corporal power that has the same rights as citizens, because they fall under the 14th Amendment, and that's a very, very dangerous thing. They are not responsible for society. They are only responsible for their own stockholders by law. It's in the 14th Amendment. Mm. Those things are very dangerous.
You know what makes it so difficult? That these large corporations that you speak of, they're so far out there that people, to try to even say for the month of June, let's not buy from any of them, when here we're talking about Walmarts, we're talking about McDonald's, we're talking about Verizon and Sprint and all these Starbucks and all these major corporations that people seem to not even, they can't live without. If they could stop buying from them, purchasing for the whole month of November, then maybe
we have all become addicted.
Exactly.
Buying to
Leon.
We have
Leon,
been, we
you
are,
said to the month of November, isn't it to the month of June?
I'm sorry, I meant to say June.
I don't know why
November stuck with me like that. But anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Marion. I'm sorry.
Well, we have all become addicted to dopamine. You know, we get dopamine from buying stuff and all that. You know, before capitalism, we had to, you know, we had to hunt and we had to gather and we had to do that. And now that's all, you know, fallen away. Now we live a very luxury life, we think. And we have all become addicted to our cell phones and the iPhones and, you know, the newest television and the newest car. And, you know, we are addicted to this dopamine. And that's where the corporal power and the 1% of the 1% depends on our addiction, you know. So we all are addicted.
I tell you, there's just so many issues that we've discussed today on the radio show. I mean, we've touched the base on so many areas. But what I'd like to have you do, Mariam, if you can give the audience your information, contact information, and William, if there's anything, any information you want to give the audience, please go ahead. We have about 9 minutes left. We should be shutting down pretty soon because, Mariam, I know it's almost past your bedtime.
No, it's okay. my website is www.deeperjustice.com, but I also have another website, www.mariamjacobs.com. You can also find a book there and information about the documentary that I've been into. I am on Facebook with my own name and the Deeper Justice page, and I'm on Instagram. And my email address is mariamjacobs67@gmail.com. I think that's about it.
Yeah. And Mariam, I know that in Norway and other countries out there that the book is in Dutch, but is the book
it's
in
English?
It's
also in English. Yeah,
Is it in English out there where you are as well?
Yeah, it's also in English. And on these two websites, you can find where you can order them in English.
Oh, okay.
Suspended values in concentration camp and prison.
And those websites,
and,
Mariam, what was that? Mariam Jacobs.
Yeah, Mariam Jacobs, Jacobs .com. Yeah, and the other one, deeperjustice.com is also in English, Dutch and English.
Okay.
And you got it? Okay. What did you ask me, Leon? Oh, yeah. I am now researching for my next book, which is going to be about justice, but not simply justice as we see it in society, but justice which go much deeper than the words. So I try to dig that up. Justice and moral responsibility. That will be my second book.
Yeah,
That's good. If you ever have time in your busy schedule, I'd like to invite you to the Lakota Territory. I got a group of young women that we're working with. That we're trying to restore the women's ceremonies back in place to do the rite of passages for the women and the rite of passages for the boys. But as many women, older women leaders that I can try to find to bring in to help these younger women, younger girls, and my daughters and my nieces' generation, that's actually them. I'm trying to help them reach further out and collaborate and network with other resources that are with the same like mind effective on a social justice issue, you know, the political, all those things that we addressed today. These young women are really going to be good, and for the work that you do on a social level would be really fundamentally beneficial for them to come and for you to come and share that with them, just for them to see that there's a lot of work being done by other women besides us.
I would love to. Did you write down my email address?
Yeah, I got your
contact. Do you have it?
Yeah, I got it.
Also,
and mine would be zintkala@hotmail.com.
Wait a minute, that goes too quick.
William, you can message Mariam on Facebook Messenger, and then you can exchange your information.
Well, please send me an email to mariamjacobs67@gmail.com, and then I will reply you. Then I'm going to send you an answer, please. Will you do that, please?
Okay,
mariamjacobs67@gmail.com. That's M-I-R-I-M-I-R-I-A-M jacobs67@gmail.com.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, if you send me an email, I am going to respond to you. I'm very interested in what you're saying. Thank you very much, by the way.
William, is there anything you'd like to say to the audience as well, William, before we do close?
Excuse me. I just wanted to let people know that we are in the midst of this all, the struggles that we are enduring, continuing to restore and reclaim and rebuild and conserve and preserve for the future generations, this younger generation, helping them to free themselves from, again, the addiction, the alcohol and the drugs and the criminal lifestyle that we've been forced to live. And right now, if we can, we are doing our best to, you know, both the Ogallalas and the Suchongu and the Spanarock and Eagle Butte, the four main reservations on our in Dakota Territory are doing our best to regather and organize. So any kind of help from out there would be good for this younger generation, because it's all about them. They're the future, you know, and we're going to do our best to cultivate that future, you know.
Okay.
So I just want to say that much, and thank you all.
And William, I want to let you know, and if you can let others know, every Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, we've been holding these discussions on the upcoming event in June of 2023. And we have a list of things that we're going to be addressing in June. If you want to add anything onto that list, we will be sharing that list. And if you want, just add whatever the concerns you have on there. And in June, we will be addressing all of these. And we ask that everybody get involved, to be prepared to write emails, letters, make calls to media, especially in this country, because the media tends to report one-sided stories. They never report both sides, and they have to go into the prisons, meet with the incarcerated individuals. They have to meet with people that they have not given the opportunity to state their concerns and their issues. So please join us on Tuesdays, every Tuesday from now until the end of May. We'll be preparing for the June event, and we invite anyone and everyone to join us on Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And the call-in number is 657-383-1630. We thank all of you for listening in. We hope that you will be joining us in the Tuesday and next Wednesday shows, and we thank you for listening in. And again, Mariam Jacobs, psychosocial therapist and author of Suspended Values in Concentration Camp and Prisons. Please thank Mariam, and thank you, William, and thank you, Dorothy, for being on. We appreciate you being on. And audience, we are going to be ending this episode now. I hope everyone has a good day, good evening, and we will be back on Tuesday. Thank you so much. Thank you, Mariam.
Thank you.